Morning, thanks for coming. Pretty decent audience. One quick question, if you don't mind, before I kind of do introductions. Is any of you running production deployments in IaaS today? I don't necessarily mean just Azure. Google, AWS, any of them will do. Just a few. Okay. Anyone thinking about doing it? I guess that's why you're in the room. And anyone absolutely not doing it at all, but just come to see what they can tell their people back at workplace to say, this is why we're not going to do it. One or two. Okay. So you're going to get arguments for all three of those cases today, hopefully. And so I retitled the slide slightly from starting SharePoint 2016 in IaaS, which was the title in the agenda, to so just starting SharePoint on IaaS, because I'm going to touch on both 13 and 16, and we'll even talk a tiny little bit about 2010 and basically why you won't do that. But hopefully you'll get something for everybody. There's a lot of content. I will hopefully finish all of it, and we'll see where we go. But I'd like to think that almost every slide has at least one reference piece of information you can take away with you. So my name's Neil Hodgkinson. I'm a senior program manager in the Office 365 CXP team. I have a very simple mandate. When I'm talking to my customers, I represent engineering. When I'm talking to engineering, I represent the customer. So both sides of the coin generally hate me. I get stuck in the middle. But I typically like to think I can defend and argue on behalf of our customers to give engineering food for thought as to why they need to change what they do or develop new processes around things or indeed improve products. So that's me in a nutshell. What we're going to talk about today, does anyone know nothing about IaaS? And no one's going to put their hand up for that question, right? Okay, who's a guru on IaaS then? All right, I was looking for a co-presenter, but I guess not. So we're going to start with the basics. What is IaaS? Very, very lightweight, very simple. We're not going to go super deep on that. And we're going to talk specifically around supportability, what you should, shouldn't, can't, where things fit. And we're going to touch on, again, not just Azure, but we're going to talk a little bit about AWS and a tiny bit about Google. In terms of a moment of clarity, there are some very, very dangerous things you can do with Azure and IaaS specifically around SharePoint. It's a fabulous platform, an IaaS platform. It gives you tons of flexibility and capability. You do it wrong, and it'll bankrupt you. You do it wrong, you'll have massive performance issues. So we're going to touch on some of those things. We're going to talk about planning an IaaS deployment from a perspective of SharePoint. Obviously, that's why we're in the room. But we'll also look on a lot of the things you think about with SharePoint are very applicable to other platforms as well. Specifically, things like Exchange, a lot of the kind of underlying performance requirements are very similar. And then we'll wrap up with a few comments. Like I say, I do have a lot of content. I'll try and throw some demos in as well. We're obviously not going to deploy a SharePoint farm in IaaS in this session, right? Because you'll lose your lunchtime. So we'll keep that to a minimum, but I'll show you some of the pointers where you can go and get the resources to do that. So let's start with the basics. IaaS 101, infrastructure as a service. Basically, infrastructure as a service just consists of the same kind of thing you deploy in your own data centers, except we're deploying it in Azure in our case, or in AWS or the Google Cloud Platform. It is essentially just servers, storage, network, platform services. You'll have heard quite a popular phrase at the moment is, it's not a cloud, it's just somebody else's computer. That seems to be quite popular. And essentially, that's all IaaS is, right? It's just VMs running on Microsoft or Amazon or Google hardware. So very, very straightforward. It's no different in terms of what you end up with as a service or as a platform. And there are lots of competing offerings out there, both virtualized, kind of traditional scenarios. If you think about the Microsoft Office 365 dedicated platform, it's really just a hosted platform running physical or sometimes virtual machines hosted by Microsoft. It's another form of infrastructure as a service, if you like, but abstracted away. And there are other vendors out there who do not just virtualized platforms, but they do physical platforms, hardware installations that you can work off. But essentially what we're talking about is a platform that's hosted by somebody else that you have a level of administrative control over, but you generally will not have access to the underlying metal that the machines are running on. That's all part of the service that you pay for. Somebody else looks after that. What about requirements then? What are customers looking for when they're thinking about putting SharePoint on IaaS? And this is, things get kind of complicated here. Capacity on demand is an interesting one. Obviously, in many of our services, in Office 365, for example, you don't need to care about keep increasing your storage pools, keep adding more storage to it. with an IaaS platform, you need to provision that storage and manage that storage. But the storage is pretty much there at the time you need it. You very rarely run into an instance where, hey, I want to attach some more drives to my SQL server or increase the size of those drives, and you get a response back from an IaaS platform saying, sorry, we're out of space. You know, that's not what the service is designed for. Elasticity. I've come across this several times with customers who assume that because Azure has the ability to do kind of on-demand based elasticity and the ability to scale up and scale down VMs as well as PaaS services, that they can do that with SharePoint. If there's anything you take away from this session today, do not try and do that with SharePoint. Right? It's unsupported for one, and it will lead you into a whole world of hurt for another. SharePoint does not support virtual machine, scale up, scale down, elasticity without a whole lot of governance and compliance around it. The other thing you can do is think about, people ask for, well, they want to deploy environments in different locations. So perhaps I'm a large company, I'm located in Europe, we might do a merger or an acquisition with a company in the US, and they need infrastructure over there. Do I want to go and build a new data center? No, probably not. Azure or one of the IaaS platform vendors might be a great solution for that. It can give you resources close to where those people are, managed by your own teams, available over the internet. And then obviously the interesting one is cloud is cool, right? That's debatable. I honestly think cloud is cool. They pay my wages, right? So I do. But from a perspective of cloud being cool, it's not always the right thing to do. It's not always the right choice. But it does, people feel great when they can just go, hey, I can just fire up my Azure VMs, or I can manage my Azure VMs from anywhere. I can load my Azure management app and spin up and spin down VMs on my phone. So people are kind of embracing all that technology. So from that perspective, it is new. It is the cool thing to do. Cost savings, no. Azure IaaS, AWS IaaS, Google IaaS, any other IaaS platform you can think of, they are not really going to save you money, right? I told you I'm going to be honest here. If you build it wrong, it's going to cost you a fortune. So be very careful. I'll try and give you some guidance about the right way to do it as we go forward here. But don't think and automatically assume IaaS platforms are cheap. We support a number of scenarios. The key ones there, people want to use it for dev, test, and pilot. That is by far and away the more common scenario. I have, at the moment, probably upwards of 80 different VMs running in Azure for a variety of different scenarios. We're testing out multiple configurations and multiple capabilities for SharePoint, specifically with SharePoint 16, and I'll talk about a few of those in a few minutes. Other things like hybrid infrastructure, disaster recovery, those are becoming much more popular. Hybrid infrastructure with your information or your servers located in IaaS can offer you some significant improvements or significant performance benefits. If you think about how we build the Microsoft network. If any of you have been to some of Paul Collins' sessions this week, he talks about the Microsoft network and our backbone and how that all works. Shortcutting network connectivity between Azure IaaS and Office 365 for hybrid scenarios is a clear benefit for hosting your machines in our IaaS cloud. And then disaster recovery is, I think, almost the number one reason to use IaaS. It's a super platform for doing virtual machine replication to. If you want to use SharePoint with Azure Site Recovery Services is the only service we support where we will allow you to run that we will fully support virtual machine replication and replication of the configuration in admin content DBs with SharePoint, something we won't do with anything else. So disaster recovery for me is kind of number one scenario. So general supportability. We have a number of supportability concerns with SharePoint. About 2 years ago, I was asked to validate SharePoint on IaaS. Can we support it? Well, actually, the documentation said we've supported it already for a number of years, since SharePoint 2010. So we couldn't then turn around and change our mind and say no. So yes, we do support SharePoint on IaaS. Historically, it's never been something we've specifically tested. With SharePoint 16, the engineering team basically decided they had a mandate that was kind of pointed towards how do we make SharePoint 16 an IaaS-friendly platform? And to be honest, they didn't have to do a great deal to it, other than things like elasticity, and they said, no, we're not having that. Things like zero downtime patching, we've got that. Obviously, that's not just applicable to IaaS, it's applicable to on-premises as well. So there's a ton of things in there that are really pretty cool in terms of supportability. Other things to think about, your hypervisor might not be supported. I'll cover that specifically in a few minutes. Elasticity, I've already mentioned, is not supported. And storage requirements. The easiest thing in the world is to build an under-specced SharePoint farm in Azure. And it happens all the time. The number of support cases we get, the number of escalations we get from our customers and partners saying, this environment doesn't work properly, it's because they've generally tried to do it as cheap as they possibly can, or with the lowest spec machines that they can use, or hardware they can use, or they've mismatched things, using a high-spec VM with low-spec storage, or trying to shoehorn high-spec storage into a low-spec VM. The sizing of your VM matters. It's not all about cores and memory. There's more to it than that. And we'll come on to that as we talk about design. And then other things like potential issues with complex DR, SharePoint and disaster recovery. ASRI is a great feature. We only announced support for it late last year, early this year. People are trying to do other complex things with disaster recovery. If you think about scenarios, if any of you are doing always-on availability groups with SharePoint and SQL Server with SharePoint for disaster recovery, that gets very complicated if you try and lift and shift that into Azure. The limitations around things like the Azure load balancer and the single IP addressing makes it very hard to run stretch clusters. So that gets quite challenging. We've got some great documentation out there. I'm not going to go into detail on it. Is it supported? Yes. Do you need to think very, very carefully about how you build it? Absolutely. So where are we in terms of Microsoft and our stance on supportability? So we do support a number of VMs, a number of scenarios. I've mentioned these already, so I won't dwell on this slide, but things like dev, test, and pilot, ideal, superb, easy to spin up, easy to spin down, save some money, you know, keep them, have a bots running or Azure automation jobs running that just close the machines down at the end of the day. Keep it nice and simple for you to save you money. Disaster recovery target, we've got documentation on log shipping, we've got documentation on always on. ASR documentation, I think, is out there in the public, and we're improving that as things go forward. There are limitations, though, from supportability around how you build the VMs. And one of these things is the concept of premium storage. Premium storage, we'll talk about when we come onto the storage section of the talk, but it is not a specific requirement to run all your VMs with premium storage in SharePoint or with SharePoint in Azure. However, there is one specific role, the search index role, that you can't have running in a supported format without premium storage, because you simply can't hit the capacity requirements and the bandwidth requirements. And again, I'll come on to that as we get to that section. So there are a number of details about supportability. Yes, we do support these scenarios. 2010 I mentioned, this is hopefully the only time I mentioned 2010. 2010 is supported as a platform. It's still listed in the supported the list of supported software server solutions on IaaS, but obviously it's out of mainstream support. So don't expect us to give too much new guidance on SharePoint 2010. I mentioned already the premium storage thing. Yes, absolutely. Think about it very carefully. If you build everything on premium storage, you're gonna have the best possible chance of getting this thing right, but you're also introducing that thing I mentioned earlier about the potential for huge costs, right? Premium storage, when you provision it, if you provision a 30 terabyte premium storage drive, you're paying for all 30 terabytes up front, right? You're not paying for it like standard storage where you only pay for the capacity you actually use. That's just something to think about. And then licensing. We handle licensing in IaaS through software assurance and license mobility. The SharePoint platform is supported, 2013, 2016, all versions of those platforms. The one thing that is not supported is Office web applications, Office online server. You cannot legally license those two platforms in IaaS, either Azure, AWS, or Google. And that gives us some limitations when we think about SharePoint, because people think SharePoint and those platforms go hand in hand. Why can't we have them as well? And that causes enormous frustration. The reason being is basically because they're not covered under license mobility. They're classed as client. Even though they're servers, they're classed as clients when it comes to licensing. So be very careful with that. If you deploy Office web apps or Office online server in Azure in production, you're in breach of license. Okay, just be careful. Then we come to AWS. AWS hypervisor is technically unsupported. If you look at the software validation guidelines, Microsoft will not support your platform running on AWS. We will give you reasonable support, as we say with all these scenarios, but if you're using or raising support cases for your software, your SharePoint boxes running on AWS hypervisors, you may at some point reach a point where Microsoft simply says, you know what, you need to reproduce this problem on a supported hypervisor because we're concerned that the hypervisor is the issue. I don't want to harp on the point. If you follow the support article and look at the guidance for the SVV program, you'll see which ones are supported and which are not. But the Azure IaaS is, but AWS has some limitations. So just be wary of that. You might run into some additional issues. I mentioned earlier about this being not for everybody. So when we think about Azure and IaaS, it isn't the easiest thing to do, right? A lot of the things you want to do with SharePoint apply in IaaS as equally as they apply on premises. It may work out though, as I said already, coming back to the cost thing, that your physical hardware may ultimately work out to be cheaper. You know, you have that buy it once CapEx expenditure. You don't have to think too much about your, well, you do have to think about your ongoing licensing costs and that kind of thing, but running machines in Azure, and I'm gonna quote some prices as we look at the deployment options, may well be specifically quite expensive. Okay, so just be careful, especially if you're looking for a platform that's gonna perform extremely well. On that side, we do want you to have kind of choice. We want you to have the right options for you when it comes to deploying out here. So, and we provide a number of options in terms of how we're gonna build our farms, both in Azure, and whether what choices you would make as to whether you, Azure is the right selection for you. You'll have heard this for years now, but Office 365 is our focus. If you can do it in 365, do it in 365. It's our primary focus for all of our SharePoint and other collaboration workloads. That's where all the investments go in. This is kind of standard mantra now. We will ship you those features and capabilities, or most of them, some of them perhaps, over time in the feature pack releases with SharePoint 2016. But if you want to stay up to date, go Office 365. If you cannot come up with a reason why on-premises SharePoint is valid for you, then IaaS is not valid either. Right? It's the same kind of mandate, same kind of mantra. Try and do it, and I harp on it this several times through the session, but it really is a case of thinking about Office 365 being first and foremost. And if there's reasons, valid reasons why, for example, full trust code solutions that you can't migrate or can't change, that's a valid reason. Not necessarily a valid reason to go IaaS. You may stay on premises. But again, think about Office 365 being right. And then deployment options. So I mentioned we have a number of scenarios and options we can look at. VMs for dev and test is probably the most popular one. I think when we looked at, the last time I checked the numbers for the marketplace deployments of SharePoint, which is really the only thing, if you think about when we try and see what our customers are doing in Azure, in IaaS. However, we can't be invasive and start looking what's going on inside the machines because that's a breach of confidentiality. But what we can do is we can look at the kind of marketplace deployments. There are images in the marketplace you can use as automated deployment targets and trials, or you know, you want to just test and do POCs. When we look at those numbers, the SharePoint trial images, the marketplace, the HA and the non-HA design, which I'll show you in a demo in a few minutes, they are about 80% of the total amount of marketplace deployments is SharePoint. It represents an enormous amount of marketplace deployment infrastructure onto the Azure platform. So clearly, even though we give these guidelines about what not to do or why you shouldn't do it or why reasons why you should, clearly people are very, very interested. And this kind of scenario, the dev test one, is a classic. I need to spin up a SharePoint environment nice and quickly. It's by far quicker to do it on Azure or do it on IaaS than it is to go and find a machine or install the software, configure it how you like it, and all that kind of thing. It's much simpler to do it this way. And it can make sense from a development team perspective if you control the way those machines are working, those machines are managed, by having them in that scenario. If you have a dev shop that runs 9 to 5, then use Azure automation, spin those machines up half an hour before the people come into the office, close them down half an hour after they go home, have an exception process, that kind of thing. That can control your costs, control your resources. But it's very, very simple to do this kind of thing. I mean, the diagram's fairly straightforward. All we're doing is dropping VMs on top of the Azure hypervisor, giving you as much storage as you need. You can control and configure this using templating, which we'll look at later. Or you can just spin up simple machines. I need a trial VM and just go. And I'll show you that in a demo. Other scenarios, this is where we start to think about more production-orientated scenarios. So what if I want to really do production? I might think about, well, I need to extend my Active Directory. I might need to think about DR. So if I'm thinking about, say, a customer in say, Atlanta, and I want to have a DR stamp in, I don't know, Los Angeles, somewhere like that, I can spin up an environment where I'm building connected infrastructure across multiple data centers in Azure, connected multiple, single or multiple connections to my on-premises infrastructure, and I can control all this using Microsoft Operations Manager, using a number of other operations capabilities. There's lots of software vendors out there that produce tooling for this. But by extending my infrastructure into the cloud, I can do other things in terms of management. So I can have infrastructure that's dormant in the cloud in a DR type scenario. I can extend my Azure AD, extend my Active Directory out there and use it as if it's just a regular extension of my network. In that case, again, I keep coming back to cost, it can be a cheaper option than building a multi-million dollar data center somewhere. So it's just one of the options we give you, but there are complications with it. You need to think about management of DNS, you need to think about how you're going to manage those domains. Some customers will have limitations on the security across those network boundaries, all those kind of things you need to think about as well. Hybrid becomes quite interesting. I've done some testing between on-premises machines in hybrid configuration versus machines located in Azure IaaS in a hybrid configuration. And if you're located already kind of sat on the Microsoft network, things are obviously much quicker. You know, simple search federation tests work faster with hybrid. Is it the right thing to do in terms of for your business to make sure you're just giving people a few extra seconds of reduced latency? Again, it comes back to this whole cost versus complexity thing. It may or may not be the right thing to do, but it's an optional configuration. And it can, in some cases, simplify things, right? Because you're already on the Microsoft backbone in this respect. And it's great for things like, what if I want to have a point solution spun up because I'm sending a tag team out somewhere? Say you're coming to a conference and you need some resources close to where you are. You could spin up an environment there, virtualize, put the virtualized equipment you need in there, and then just go off and run it as you see fit. Disaster recovery, as I mentioned earlier, is the kind of the core reason why I got involved in Azure in the first place, and Azure IaaS for SharePoint, which was to validate what we can do in terms of disaster recovery, fallback, and the different techniques that Azure gives us for virtual machine backup, restore, replication, etc. And disaster recovery is a very simple scenario. Azure is expensive or can be expensive when you're running virtual machines hot all the time, or when you're running virtual machines that are very high spec. With disaster recovery, you have a number of options. You can replicate machines that are switched off, essentially, in the target location up in an Azure data center. Or you can have machines running, so I'm doing dual farm scenarios, I'm doing log shipping over the network, or always on availability over the network, and the machines up in Azure don't need to be running at full performance. So I might be running machines on premises that are high spec, maybe 16, 32 cores, lots of memory. In Azure, I could be running them at the bare minimum just to keep them up. And if we have to go through a disaster recovery scenario and fail over, then I can increase the CPU count, increase the memory load by modifying the virtual machine type, modify the SKU. So I can increase my save money in that respect as well. It's a very, very compelling target. Equally so, the configuration around that disaster recovery. We get customers doing disaster recovery Azure to Azure. We can do disaster recovery on-prem to Azure. And with the new Azure Site Recovery services, we support not only just Microsoft Hyper-V on-premises, where we can do Hyper-V to Hyper-V on-premises disaster recovery using agents in Azure as a controller, but VMware as well. We support the whole VMware stack with VMware to Azure, VMware to VMware. We can even do quite clever things with ASR and do physical tin metal machine or base hardware on-premises and use virtualization stack as your target for disaster recovery, or indeed for migration, if you plan to move like bulk move content up into Azure. Disaster recovery perspective again, RPO and RTO becomes interesting. It really depends what you're trying to achieve. It's the same conversation you would have as if you're on-premises, completely on-premises running between two data centers. What's your target for recovery point? What's your target for recovery time? Everybody wants zero for both. Nobody has that much money. So it's kind of a challenge we have when we come to choose the disaster recovery, and we could get into a whole session on disaster recovery choices, disaster recovery architecture. But with all of the options that we have, log shipping, always on availability groups, and ASR, we're giving you different configuration options, all of which can meet your requirements, or should be able to meet, mostly meet your requirements. So if you're looking for a relatively or a low RPO, low RTO, then ASR might be your choice, or always on availability groups. If you have a much, if you have a much more flexible RTO or RPO, then log shipping might be the easiest one for you. It's certainly easier to configure, and from a cost perspective in terms of licenses that support it, it's cheaper as well. So there's a question. Okay, good question. So the question was, if you configure hybrid features in SharePoint 2016 or 13 on premises, and then you're failing over into Azure as a DR target, how easy is it to maintain those features? Well, if you think about how that process works, a simple scenario, in order to maintain a hybrid connection from SharePoint on premises to Office 365, there's a couple of things we care about. We care about a certificate trust, a certificate-based trust. We care about the authentication realm of the farm, and we care about the SPN. So what is my source of the hybrid connection, my on-premises URL, if you like? Those three things are very easy to replicate into a DR scenario. If you're doing machine replication with ASR, they all go over anyway, and everything's the same. If you're doing log shipping to a different farm, and you're going to stand up a different SharePoint farm in Azure, you may have to do some work to configure that, but you could configure that up front, right? And you can have multiple farms, SharePoint on-premises farms or in IaaS, connected to the same Office 365 tenant for hybrid functionality. So it's something to think about, but it's relatively straightforward. Other things to think about when you're looking at DR-based scenarios, connectivity for your users. If you've got a bunch of users on-premises that want to connect to SharePoint on-premises and you're going to fail them over into Azure, then think about that. How do we route the traffic? It takes time for DNS to update. What's my load balancing strategy going to be in Azure? All those kind of things start to complicate things. But they're not specific SharePoint stories, right? They're more associated to moving into Azure generally or failing over from one data center to another generally. And then we have scenarios where customers just decide, you know what, I'm going to lift and shift everything into Azure. And again, fully supported. I'm working with a customer today that has about 600 SharePoint machines on premises. They're doing some consolidation work, but their net kind of ultimate target is to move all of that up into Azure. And there's reasons for that. We already mentioned that running machines in Azure can be expensive. It can also be expensive having machines, network infrastructure, DNS infrastructure, and AD infrastructure outsourced on premises, maybe managed internally, that has additional costs associated with it as well. So you've got to think about all of that when you're factoring whether this is a good idea or a bad one. Think about the benefits. When we talk about the actual platforms themselves, Azure is not the same as Office 365. I'm using Azure and IaaS interchangeably, okay? It's not the same as Office 365. Hosting machines in Azure and IaaS isn't going to perform all of the operational work that you think you might not have to do anymore. So on premises, you have machines and farms. You have to think about backups. You have to think about patching. You have to think about power and maintenance. Well, the power piece goes away. An element of the maintenance goes away, patching the underlying hypervisor stack that the machine sat on. But in terms of patching SharePoint, patching SQL, patching AD, all those security patches, controlling availability, you know, we have zero downtime now with 16, but if you're running 13, all of that operational work doesn't go away. You know, we don't take backups of your machines for you. You have to do that yourself. You can use the inbuilt tooling in Azure if you want to, but you have to think about that yourself. You have to think about recovery yourself, right? So you're not gaining anything from an operational aspect. You're just saving space in a data center in one way to think about it. And also from a networking standpoint, your network engineers may be very used to using traditional network tooling and traditional network monitoring capabilities on premises, which is pretty standard. They're looking for bandwidth consumption. They're looking for utilization percentages on the network lines. They still have to do that in Azure if you want to think about monitoring the capacity and monitoring the usage. It isn't going to go away. But bear in mind, they don't have access to the routers and the network connectivity in Azure. They have to use it and they have to do things in a very different way. So that kind of comes back to the same point again, that SharePoint Online might be the right way to go. Okay, but just bear in mind the reasons why and the reasons why not. I'm going to show you something. I imagine most of you have seen this, but this is the kind of easy button approach to doing SharePoint in IaaS. We have a number of templates. My machine will come alive. There we go. In Azure today, there's a number of templates. If any of you have played with this, it's probably one of the simplest ways to get machines running in IaaS. And I wanted to kind of level set the rest of the presentation based on what we show you here. The Azure templates that we have are based on JSON, and they're based on some PowerShell, and I'm going to show you how we build those later. But from a perspective of I need to get a SharePoint farm up and running, if you need to just get up there and test it and see what you can do and see what you have to do, the templates that we have in the marketplace are extremely useful. So if you already have an Azure subscription, you can log into the marketplace and you can see the kind of images and capabilities we have. And you also see that, as well as it just being, hey, Microsoft give us SharePoint, but there's lots of other partners out there as well that provide additional functionality and additional capability. So the partner ecosystem recognizes that SharePoint on IaaS is a valid target platform for a variety of scenarios, and they're making investments in that space as well. We don't yet have SharePoint 2016 here. That's a job I've been given to do next week. Okay, so hopefully we'll have them in there. The SharePoint 2013 image is actually very similar. If you think about what we're doing here, we're just saying deploy the SharePoint platform or deploy the SharePoint software onto a machine of a certain specification. And these are based off the trial. So if I grab the trial image there for SharePoint 2016, this is an image that was deployed about 3 weeks ago. And when we deployed this, we set the expiry date on it, because obviously SharePoint trials only have a 6-month life cycle. But this image is there for you to consume. Yes, it's a trial image. You can deploy it and use it and configure it with your own license. At that point, it becomes a production image for you. But there's a number of ways we can do this. So I could just go down here and click create, and it'll ask me various things like, what do I want the admin password to be? What storage account do I want to put it in? Those things we'll talk about later. What networks are it going to be in? What region is it going to go to? All those kind of things. The other thing we can do is we can use JSON templates or ARM templates, which is Azure Resource Manager, to do even more than just configuring the base machine or just configuring the base deployment. The HA template will actually deploy 9 machines for you in one shot. So you provide things like, what's my admin password going to be? What resource group names am I going to use? What storage accounts am I going to use? And the template-based deployment will go and deploy you highly available Active Directory, highly available SQL Server with 2 machines and a witness, and then it will drop you highly available SharePoint farm out there with 2 web servers and 2 application servers. And it will do all that in one hit. I'm not going to do it in here because we'd be watching the thing spin for a while, but it's really straightforward. If I just click create here, you'll see the kind of process you get to fill in the basic requirements. So I can give it a name, tell it what subscription I want to put it in. You can do, then you just go through and fill in. If I just do this test, and we go through, and it'll give me a whole variety of things to do in terms of the next. So you just fill out the template, tell it what size of machine you want, and we'll talk about machine sizing shortly. And that gives you the kind of basic one-shot, simple deployment that you can then play around with and test. If any of you are running MSDN subscriptions as kind of trials and playing around with, if you deploy the 9 machine farm using all of the defaults, it'll last about 4 days, right, in that deployment. So just be careful if you do that, you'll run out of credits very quickly. But that's incredibly simple to do. And if you're thinking about playing around with SharePoint in Azure, I would go and do that and just spin it up, see what you can do, see what you can play around with. The other thing it gives us that we'll see later is it gives you a template then that you can then download and play around with and reuse for your own production deployments. So you can adjust and modify the template to match what you need it to do. So So that's kind of the easy button option. There are far more complicated options. And when it comes to complication, it's planning that you have to get right. As I said it right early on in the session, if you build SharePoint in IaaS wrong, it can be difficult to then revert it and fix it all up, especially in the kind of the world of resource manager where everything's kind of tightly integrated and knitted together. But you have to make sure that you plan it properly. For those of you out there that might be SharePoint on-premises architects or engineers today, most of your skills are equally transferable to the IaaS marketplace, right? They exist the same way. Your planning requirements are mostly the same. You have the complexity of very large infrastructure. You have the same thing in IaaS. So thinking about it as an enterprise architect and how that's going to integrate with other functions and other services in the business is crucial. Simple deployments are easy. Dev, test, POC, very straightforward. You can use those trials. You can use the trial images that we provide. But it can get, as I said already, it can get more and more complicated. On-premises, your network deployment, if you're doing things like load balancing, you can configure a load balancer with lots of different rules, lots of different IP addresses, different routing capabilities. When you do that in Azure, your limitations are much more obvious in terms of what you can and can't do. So again, it's a bit of planning exercise to think about, well, if I go from one SQL server pair perhaps on-premises with multiple availability groups, can I do that exactly the same in Azure? And the answer is no, because the load balancing mechanisms that we have in Azure restrict you to one availability group per SQL pair for now. Okay, Azure addressing that scenario. But those are the things to think about. What about data center design? Your data center design that you might do on-premises, when you think about designing that for Azure, it's a little bit more interesting. Flexibility can be a benefit for you in terms of we provide you with, I think it's something like 34 different locations for Azure today. So hosting something close to you is generally relatively simple. Also, resilient deployments. You know, we provide you with two data centers. We can provide you with network connectivity between the two, VPN circuits between the two, the ability to do traffic replication between the two, and a number of complex and, in some ways, some complex, some simple scenarios around how do I move my Azure farm from one Azure data center to another in terms of HA or DR. Thinking about HA, though, we don't support doing stretch farms between two data centers, just exactly the same way we don't support that in on-premises. So just throwing that out there. But it's very, very straightforward. Data center design for Azure, while it might look complicated in terms of deploying the resources, because we do all of the back-end stuff and all of the infrastructure and all the management of that, you just need to choose where you want the thing to live, in a location closest to you. Some of the data centers have more resources than others. So if we roll out a new SKU, for example, when premium storage rolled, it took a while for all of the data centers to pick up and have that. So if you're choosing your data center location, do some research up front, make sure it's got the actual services that you need. And then your server design. SharePoint is SharePoint is SharePoint, regardless of where you put it. Right? You can't suddenly decide that, oh, I'm going to put this in IaaS so I don't need as many CPU cores, or I don't need as much RAM, or perhaps maybe I need more. It should not matter. The SKUs that you have in IaaS are pretty equally equivalent to the SKUs you would typically buy on-premises. You know, if I want to buy a 16-core box or an 8-core box with 24 gig of RAM, I can do that in both locations. So as I said before, your skills as a SharePoint architect or a SharePoint engineer are very transferable in this respect. So in terms of designing it, it'll work. But you are limited. In on-premises, you can pretty much dial up and choose whatever you like, different core strategies, hexa cores, and all those kind of things. We don't have that in IaaS. You are limited by what we provide, but what we provide is getting more and more flexible. In terms of storage, we mentioned standard and premium. There's ultimately more storage changes coming down the pipeline to vastly improve what we can offer you in terms of performance. Choosing the right storage option is critical. If you get that wrong, the whole farm can become not only unsupported because you can't meet our requirements for things like IOPS or latency, but it will lead you to a terrible user performance experience, and that just annoys everybody. And as I said already, don't undersize your VMs and be very careful in terms of your disk sizes. We have limitations in terms of disk capacity and disk sizes in Azure. Only certain machines can be attached. So if you take a DS4, for example, the amount of disks you can attach to that DS4. You want to make sure you can add enough disk capacity to it when you actually specify it up front. So make sure you fully understand the extent of the SKUs. In terms of deployment, very straightforward. A lot of these guidelines apply both on-premise as well. You know, you're going to want to use static IP, especially if you're thinking about dev test scenarios where you might reboot machines. Every time you reboot a machine in Azure, if you haven't assigned static IP addresses through the resource manager and the network, then you're going to get a new IP address, and that can make a real mess of your DNS when you come in to look at managing them. Use availability sets. Again, it's standard IaaS capability, but availability sets, when you think about fault domains, in terms of disaster recovery, if you use availability sets, you're essentially assigning multiple machines to one grouping, and then if Azure are going to go under the hood and start patching the platform that those machines are running on, we won't patch two machines from the same availability group at the same time. So we're giving you additional options in terms of making sure your environment stays online. Sysprep we support? Absolutely. But we don't support Sysprep once you've built the farm. So you can install SharePoint on a box and then Sysprep it, which is basically what you get when you deploy the trial images and what we upload into Azure for you to consume. Do not build a farm and then Sysprep it and expect to clone that farm everywhere else. SharePoint will just blow up if you try and do that. And of course, the images that we provide, if you consume our trial images to as your baseline images for your own builds, we only deploy the lowest supported version into our Azure platform. So currently, if you look at SharePoint 2013, the minimum supported version is Service Pack 1. So that's the version we leave out there. And then it gives you the flexibility to deploy multiple CUs or any other CU after that fact. If you look at some of the other platforms like Windows or SQL Server, they'll have multiple images and you can decide which one you want to use. Okay, so with SharePoint, we only deploy the minimum required one. But equally, you could just build your own. The fact that we publish an image up there is just because generally people are asking us to. If you want to do your own and have your own base resource image that's maintained and patch the latest version or perhaps have different patch versions on it, you can do that equally, just the same. When we come to look at the actual design then, what are we actually going to build? The sizing uses the on-prem guidelines. We don't have any specific, here's how you go build SharePoint on IaaS, and here's how you go build SharePoint on-prem. Our guidance is, here's how you build SharePoint. And that's all we really care about. There's no core differences in terms of how that works. If you meet the IOPS requirements with the storage you choose in IaaS, then you meet the IOPS requirements with the storage you would use on-premises as well. You have to comply to the same requirements. How you design it in terms of how you choose and how you then go and build it from a templating perspective or an infrastructure kind of choosing the SKU of the machine perspective makes that the choices might be different. You know, you might choose a generation 6 DL380 from HP for your machine on-premises. You might choose a DS4 for your machine in IaaS. As long as the actual specifications of those machines comply with our SharePoint minimum requirements, then you're good to go. You know, there's no specific statements there. Mention the VMs. There's some examples here. These things change over time. A standard DS4 here, for example, with 8 cores and 28 gig of memory, is going to give you enough horsepower to run any SharePoint workload. But when you look at the ones that we have here as well, there's some of them that don't, right? Some of them have very low CPU count, but very high memory. You get them the other way around, high CPU count, low memory. Typically, as the number, so DS12, 13, 14, as the number increases, the amount of resources goes up, which you kind of expect in terms of SKUs. The one thing you need to think about more than anything, though, is the max disk IOPS. It's very easy to re-provision a machine. If I said I deploy a DS3, and most of the machines I run in Azure, the templates that we deploy, by default, deploy DS3 class machines. So we get 4 cores, we get 14 gig of memory. If you're then going to take that onto a production workload, you might need to scale that up. 4 cores and 14 gig of memory on a DS3 will happily support every SharePoint workload we have except one. Right? You cannot or you should not run a search indexer on a DS3. The reason being, the amount of disk I/O and the bandwidth that you can achieve don't reach our minimum supported requirements. 200 megabits per second is the minimum requirement for a search indexer to be supported. So you need to think about going up to DS13 class machines. The cost difference between a DS3 and a DS13 is pretty dramatic. And I'll show you some cost numbers in a few minutes. So just think about that and think about the class of machine that you can use. So the DS, the GS class machines are the only ones you can put premium storage on. You can choose things like, well, I'm going to deploy a machine, I'm going to attach 32 standard storage disks to it. That's great. That might achieve certain requirements in terms of IOPS with all those spindles. But the bandwidth that you can achieve with that is limited by the actual physical VM or the virtual VM that you attach it to. The calculation for 32 spinning spindles of standard storage might say, this is going to give me 8,000 IOPS and it's going to give me massive, you know, 50 megabytes per second per spindle bandwidth throughput. But if the physical VM that you attach it to can't achieve that on its NIC, then it's no use to you whatsoever. So just be careful of balancing those two things out. From an AD perspective, Azure AD Domain Services, the new thing of attaching machines directly to Azure AD, is not supported for SharePoint, right, as of now. It will be supported, hopefully, in the future. It's one of the other things we've got to test next week. You will see guidance on the Azure documentation that says it's supported. That is going to change in the next day to say it's in test. Right, so just be wary of that. There's some limitations. Most of the features do work, but things like People Picker, pretty important in SharePoint, and Active Directory Import will fail because ADDS has got some limitations around global catalog lookups. But we'll work on that. In terms of the machines and the versions of AD, a lot of people today still running Windows Server 2008 for their Active Directory machines. Think about going Server 2012. The reason being with the rollback prevention that stops the accounts being invalidated if you have to reboot machines or have machines running offline for a long period of time, it's important you run a version that supports that. So if you bring up a dormant VM that's out of sync with the on-premises domain, it isn't going to try and take over and break all your AD trusts. For connectivity, pretty straightforward. If you're doing connectivity from on-prem to infrastructure in IaaS because you want to run services up there that aren't necessarily internet accessible, so you might run applications that are regular server-based apps and they need different type of connectivity and you need to put VPN connection or ExpressRoute up there, consider ExpressRoute as an option, certainly for Azure, especially if you're looking at mission-critical services. Everything else is just the same. Use availability sets, follow static IP addresses, of course, with Active Directory. All kinds of weird stuff happens if you don't. So, again, nothing special, right? It's just the same as you would do if you were on-premises. Network architecture we've mentioned already. Think about the connectivity. Make sure your network administrators or your network engineers are familiar with the way Azure does networking. It is different for typical on-premises because they don't have access to the infrastructure that they would have in your own environment. And from a load balancer perspective, you've got a number of options there in terms of things. In fact, I've got a slide. You've got a number of options in there. You can use the standard Azure load balancer. Again, it works for many applications. We completely support it with SharePoint. It is limited in terms of the full complex capabilities you would expect to have if you went with, say, an F5 or a Citrix device. They have much more complex configuration, rule sets and scenarios and capabilities. The Azure load balancer is a little bit limited. It gives you basic load balancing capability, and then you can build some kind of health probes on top of that to ensure that your services remain up. But it works. It's very simple and it works. So what is it we're trying to build? If we look at service management, right, we haven't discussed the differences between service manager and resource manager. Service manager is fully supported, but the old way of doing things, we talk about cloud services and we're not getting into an Azure architecture discussion. SharePoint's fully supported in both service manager, where we think about deploying machines into cloud services, and also into resource manager, where we think about deploying individual components, like we'll deploy a NIC and we'll associate it to a machine. And we'll deploy storage and associate it to a machine. It's a very different paradigm, too much for this session. But we support both right now. Service Manager will go away eventually, but not for a while yet. And when we're thinking about deploying these things, I've mentioned availability sets. Think about the storage, which we'll come on to in a few minutes. Think about the VMs themselves and making sure that you're distributing those VMs across Azure resources that make sense for those VMs. Don't try and pack all of your virtual machine drives, for example, into one storage account, because you're going to very quickly maximize the amount of IOPS capability in that and the amount of bandwidth capability. And it might also limit you as we introduce new storage capabilities going down the line. Best practices for storage. While we talk about best practice, good practice, 2 machines per storage account is reasonable, I would say, in production. If you want to take advantage of some changes that are coming down the pipeline soon, go with one machine per storage account. So you're basically saying, I have a storage container, and I stick my VHD inside that container, and that's the only thing that lives in there, and it has a maximum amount of bandwidth and a maximum of IOPS capability. All architectural, I mentioned before about your architectural discussions, it's not just SharePoint that benefits from that, it's everything. They're all standard Azure discussions to have. Always deploy two of everything though, AD, SharePoint, SQL, make sure you're running highly available in the cloud as well. Don't just rely on it as a simple target disaster recovery capability. In terms of the SKU that you might want to use, the size of the SKU is pretty critical, right? This is showing two unsupported sizes, actually, for SharePoint, and you can see the clear difference. This is just a page load test. 2,000 users hitting a 2,000 item SharePoint list. Typical kind of thing you might come across on premises, maybe it's a scenario you might include in a load test, but this just shows the difference between choosing lower spec SKUs, because yes, I can deploy an A3, and yes, SharePoint will install on it, and yes, if there's only me using it, that's probably okay. It's probably going to work. But if I want to start thinking about production, I'm going to very quickly run into these scenarios where performance tanks, users get annoyed, and I have to think about increasing the size of the SKU, and the increasing the size of the SKU means an outage, and it means additional cost. So make sure you get that right. I used pounds here, just because since Brexit, it's quite embarrassing to quote dollars, for me, specifically. It's very expensive to come here now. But this is kind of an average cost, what it costs us in the UK, right, in terms of pounds. But regardless of where my subscription is, I get billed in pounds. And you can see very quickly how costs can mount up. You know, four cores, the D3 there, four cores and 14 gig, is a fully supported machine for SharePoint, £300 a month. If I start to think about things like search indexes, I now need to think about SKUs like D13s or DS13s specifically so I can support premium, and I'm doubling my costs instantly. So imagine you're 8, 10 server SharePoint farm, then add SQL, then add Active Directory. The overall cost of that on a monthly basis can build up quite dramatically. And then if you go really crazy and deploy the biggest machines we have, the costs become astronomical, right? But people do this. I've seen someone do G4-based machines for SharePoint because they wanted to give it a go and see what it would do. Then they got fired. But that's the kind of things that happen. Right? It can be super expensive if you're not careful. And these prices vary. They vary from region to region. They vary from your subscription type. But they're broadly similar. And in terms of comparing SKU to SKU, they're about the same. SharePoint's interesting, but SQL gets even more interesting. There's a number of things we can do with SQL Server to support SharePoint deployments that might not necessarily, they may make sense on premises, but there's some things you can do with SQL in Azure that you can't do on premises, and they can lead to some interesting scenarios. Certainly higher memory SKUs, yes, use higher memory SKUs, because higher memory SKUs give you more bandwidth on disk, right? Critical, or more IOPS on disk, it's critical for SQL. Run tempdb on the SSD drive. Every VM in Azure, if you choose the right SKU, comes with a non-persistent solid-state storage device as a temporary storage location. That storage gets recycled every time you reboot the machine, but that's okay, because if we put tempdbs there, they get recycled every time we restart SQL Server anyway. So you can leverage SSL-based temp storage even if the rest of the machine is running on standard. So you can do that. And I have some startup scripts that will basically wait for the machine to start, provision the tempdb locations on the SSD temp storage, and then start SQL Server. So it's kind of a nice approach to doing that. And it gives you improved performance on SQL for no additional real cost. Extending your databases into Blob Store can be interesting. So if you think about SQL Server in IaaS, or even on premises, when you want to increase the amount of databases or the amount of storage on that machine, you just attach LUNs, you attach carved up pieces of a LUN, and this storage gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you end up with either loads of drive letters or hundreds of mount points. In Azure, we support something called SQL Server XIO storage, which basically gives you the ability with version SQL Server 2014 onwards to mount your content databases or any of your SharePoint databases directly into Blob Store. And instead of having to mount multiple disks onto the SQL Server, it talks over a REST endpoint to a Blob Store instead. The performance, you might think, well, if I'm not attaching a drive, is it slower? And it's actually not. In my experience, performance got better because by making a direct connection from the NIC on my SQL server to the storage, instead of having to go through a whole array of connectivity to where we provision your storage in SQL Server. So it makes things kind of interesting. It's definitely worth testing. There's a bunch of articles out on the internet for how to do it. And it's easy from a management perspective, because when you open up your machine, you've not got hundreds of disks or loads of disks with loads of storage arrays hanging off them. Generally with Azure Storage, as I mentioned already, D and G series VMs, or DS and GS if you want premium storage, very, very important. LRS storage is critical, right? We only support LRS with SharePoint. Using LRS, which is locally redundant storage, gives us the ability to have three copies of your VHDs or three copies of your blob store running on in the data center where you provision the storage. And we can do kind of failover and we do fix-ups behind the scenes if we have a problem with storage. GRS, or globally redundant service, replicates those storage arrays to another location. Great, you might think, that's fantastic. We're again, instant disaster recovery capability. The problem is it's not crash consistent or write consistent recovery. So we can't guarantee the consistency of your machines if you use GRS, okay? So don't think of that as being a disaster recovery capability. When we think about the machines I mentioned already, we can go through the various SKUs, but basically what we're looking at here is the cost increasing as we go forward. It's the same kind of message I was giving you earlier. Choose the VM to match the workload. That's the critical message. And don't go and provision a whole load of DS13s for every single server in your SharePoint farm, because that's going to cost you a lot of money. It's going to cost you a lot of effort. Just provision the machine you need. DS3s, DS4s, more than capable for front-end loads, for app server loads. DS13s are very much more applicable for search index loads. I'll go through this very quickly. The graph's kind of interesting to look at, but the numbers make more sense. This is basically looking at premium storage. So we're provisioning our SharePoint VMs. What storage are we going to choose when we want to use those VMs or provision them? And you have to be very careful, right? We have IOPS limitations. We have IOPS requirements for things like content databases. We must meet a minimum level of IOPS per gigabyte in the content DB. But we also have to think about latency as well. Disk latency exceeding 20 milliseconds is crippling for SharePoint. So while we can do things quite easily with standard storage, if you look at the top line, for example, or those, the second line down, where we're looking at 8K operations with 10K disks in standard, we're hitting 35 megabits per second. That's kind of okay if you're a web front end and doing nothing else, but if you're a SQL server or if you're an indexer, that's no use whatsoever. And latency of 35 milliseconds is not appropriate. The green boxes are where we're talking about environments that cover the required bandwidth for search roles, which is our highest requirement. But again, there's no point having 498 megabits of bandwidth with 80 milliseconds of latency, right? Your performance is going to tank. You're not going to get that throughput that you actually need. There are very few scenarios where we meet all cases. And in fact, on this particular graph, admittedly, this was a test done just by us in isolation. You might get, you know, you need to do it yourself. But with 8K operations running 32 disks attached to a SQL or attached to a VM, we can get our premium bandwidth at 289 megabits per second. It's not super high, but it's well above our supported requirements of 200. But we can hit premium latencies of 4 milliseconds, which is pretty impressive, regardless of the physical storage or virtual storage. So it's worth looking at making sure you carve up your disks and choose the right storage as appropriate. This is where the kind of disk scenario comes in. So because we have our limitations with SharePoint of this 200 megabits per second, with standard disks on SharePoint, if you're using for index roles where we have a minimum requirement of 200 megabits per second, it's very, very hard to hit standard disks or get standard disks to exceed that or even meet it. There's quality of service policies applied to the storage or access to the storage, and you'll very quickly reach those limitations, especially with high throughput requirements such as search indexes. Premium, quality of service after 500 megabits per second, well above what we actually need for SharePoint. Again, with IOPS, it's not always about IOPS. Everyone says, oh, I can't get the IOPS, I don't need the IOPS. How much IOPS do I need to deploy this SharePoint server? It's not always about the IOPS. SQL, critical for IOPS. You've got to get those transactions through. You need those those that kind of processing power to be based on the number of IOPS per second. With SharePoint specifically, search, as I keep mentioning, the search indexer, it's not always about IOPS, and more specifically, it's about bandwidth and latency. So bear those things in mind. In terms of deployment options then, we've got a few things we can do. Classic PowerShell scripting is actually my favorite because it gives me loads of flexibility and I can play around, and if I want to do a quick ad hoc machine with a few different parameter changes, very, very easy to deploy a machine using classic PowerShell. There's loads of resources out on the internet where you can download these. If you want my scripts, which might not necessarily be the best ones, but they work for me, I'll be happy to share them with you. Other options, Azure Resource Manager templates. And this is where we're going. That marketplace experience I showed you earlier, very simply, is based off Resource Manager templates. And within a Resource Manager template, we can define things like what all of the parameters are going to be for the farm, like the admin password, the machine names, the cloud service name, or sorry, the resource name, the VM name, all the kind of things that you would typically think about ahead of planning when you're deploying a SharePoint farm. What do I need to have kind of documented? All those things apply inside the template. Then the final thing is DSC, or desired state configuration. And we'll have a look at some of that in a few minutes. But from an ARM template perspective, if we just look very quickly at what that actually means. He says. Okay, here we go. So again, we won't go really deep into the concept of an ARM template. We provide a whole bunch of quick start templates on GitHub. And all of them, if we go back to here, they have all kinds of templates for different things. Templates to deploy a network card or NIC, templates to deploy storage, templates to deploy resources. And they all have various different complexities. There's templates in here to deploy Windows server farms, running, you know, deploy 10 machines in one go. Right? It's a great way to have that reproducible ability to deploy machines. SharePoint-wise, the SharePoint one I showed you, the SharePoint server farm with HA that we saw in the marketplace, is actually pulled from this repository. Right? We use a version of the template in this repository to populate and specify all of the controls and configuration that's required there. And they're very, very straightforward in terms of what's in them. I'll just show you the deploy here. But these are basically a series of, it's a typical JSON document. It contains all of the parameters, specifications. We can do links in here to say, go use this parameter file to pull in all of the passwords that I need. Or we can link to Azure Secure Vault to pull out stored usernames and passwords that we already have as credentials. You can do all of that within the template. Again, there's a whole session on configuring and building these. If you want to get seriously into using Azure IaaS as a deployment target for your production workloads, I definitely recommend investing in this, because you can build template files around that. You have a basic template, and then you can just pump in the parameters that will build out the machine you actually want. Very, very straightforward. You can see things in here like the type of resources that we're looking to do. So we specify the NIC, we specify the storage, we specify the location, the resource group name, all of the parameters you will want to do, and it's all contained within this single template. Makes it nice and easy. Having said that, it's actually quite hard to do it from scratch. So if you're going to go and build one of these, I suggest you get ours or somebody else you know who has a good trusted source of ARM templates, clone theirs, and then modify it to suit your actual needs. Play around with it and see how you think. There's some great samples in MSDN of ARM templates and DSC we'll look at in a minute. You know, how do I deploy a Windows machine with IIS running on it? It's probably one of the most simplest sample templates we have, and it's great as a first step if you want to think about building your own. But certainly cloning them is the best way to do it. So they're all in GitHub. You can branch them or clone them out as you see fit and build your own, or contribute even to the ones we already have if you want to get more involved and you feel confident enough that you can make some positive changes to them. So then think about, okay, we've deployed the baseline of the machines. What about actually putting SharePoint on them? The HA image that we have, that JSON template that we have, or the ARM template that we have in the marketplace, doesn't just deploy the base machines. It then goes and applies configuration to those machines. And we use something called desired state configuration to do that. Basically, what we do is we call a number of resources that allow us to control the configuration of that machine. But they also allow us to do other things as well. Desired state configuration is almost like making a statement that we say, we want these machines to always exist with this configuration. So it prevents things like configuration drift. Imagine a scenario, you deploy a SharePoint farm, you scripted the deployment. Over time, someone might have implemented a change on that farm. Perhaps you added another web application. Perhaps you changed a web application from HTTP to HTTPS. Or you modified things, you patched the farm. All those kind of things that build into what we call configuration drift. With DSC, what we're basically saying is, I'm applying a DSC template. Keep the farm in that state, and always keep it in that state. And there's a number of things you can do in terms of controlling just the baseline configuration, or you can rerun the template and it'll revert the machine back to how it was before to prevent that configuration drift. And it kind of maintains that you can keep your farms in a state that's permanently required or what you permanently need to have, rather than have this ability or this scenario where things start to drift, your build scripts might have, hey, you know, you need to run the original build script plus all these pieces to rebuild your farm as it was today. Many, many people I speak to will say, you know, when we built our SharePoint server farm 2 years ago, it looked like this, but now it looks like that, and we don't know how to build it like that again today. You know, we have to go back to where we were and add all the pieces. DSC gives you that ability to maintain that going forward. And of course, you can modify the DSC scripts as well and reapply them to the machine. It'll reconfigure the machine for you. But they do a bunch of other things as well. They also do things like, you know, installing software, for example. I can do not just a base of saying, how do I configure the machine, but I can install the machine, control the machine with them as well. With the DSC options, it's also nice because I can say, you know what, pull that DSC resource that installs SharePoint with that configuration, apply it to that farm, or specifically to that machine, Oh, and by the way, my DR environment needs to be configured exactly the same, so I pull the same resource file, and it just goes ahead and does it for me when I call it as part of the template. So it's very, very good to make sure that you have consistency in your deployments everywhere. The other thing to think about is servers are not pets, right? They're not poodles. They're not little doggies that you look after and treat them nicely. Treat them as cattle. Keep them nicely penned together. Control them. Make sure they follow the orders that you give them and do what they need them to do, right? They're not little fluffy playthings, or they shouldn't be. So it's all about consistency and control. Mentioned already the PowerShell DSC, flip over that very quickly. They prevent kind of drift of your configuration, if you like. Then you can think about, well, not just PowerShell DSC, but SharePoint DSC. And there's some pretty interesting resources from a SharePoint DSC perspective. Again, located almost in the same place as the templates. Brian Farnhill, who's a PFE out of Australia, has built some pretty interesting templates in here. And this is one example. Here we're looking at a DSC resource. If I go to all of the resources in the list, you can see from the name the kind of things that they actually do. You know, app management service app configuration, app domain configuration. Each of these resources can be called from an ARM template to say, pull that resource and perform the action on the machine. So the first one you're almost likely to do is install SharePoint or install prerequisites for SharePoint. And there's a resource for that. So as part of your template, you just build these resources in one after the other. They get executed one after the other, and that applies to the machine. And it means you can then continue to build these consistent scenarios. If we look at the one we just had then, it's simply just PowerShell, really, where it's a function or a set of functions built that will go and perform those actions. So, for example, if you have a PowerShell, a SharePoint resource that's going to install SharePoint, the parameters you're going to provide might be, hey, I need a license key, I need to know where to go to get the images, and I just need to know the information you're going to, would typically use. If you think about the old way of installing software with an ANSI file and providing a text file that has a structured, basically, data entries of all of the various parameters you might provide during that installation, DSCs require the same kind of thing. So you provide the parameters, DSC goes ahead and executes the job for you. And you can build all these as part of your template, just roll them out as you see fit, which is precisely what we do in those HA and non-HA templates you saw in the marketplace back at day one. I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy by any means. But by looking at what people have already done and using their baseline builds or their configuration, you can very easily look at how you can tailor these things to match what you want. And I absolutely recommend you use this approach because it's repeatable and it's consistent. So SharePoint DSC, as I mentioned, I just showed you the kind of repository there. We looked at one very simple template. As I said, there's lots of them. They're fairly complicated, but they're just PowerShell, right? They're designed to implement the tasks that you would typically do either in the UI or with your own custom PowerShell scripting. Install, it can do everything, as I mentioned already. Install the binaries, create the farm, configure the farm. There's no requirement, generally no requirement, to stand up a SharePoint farm manually if you go through this approach. You can certainly get to a point where you've got everything ready to go, and then you just go and do the final tweaking and configuring yourself if necessary. But very, 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 very simple, very straightforward once you've got them built. So a couple of resources for you. Joe Rogers, if you want to use classic PowerShell, most of my PowerShell scripts are based off what Joe's done. He has a download there that can give, it basically gives you a whole ton of resources. Simple things like go fill in this Excel spreadsheet with all of the parameters, execute the PowerShell, it pulls in the Excel spreadsheet and goes builds all your farms for you in Azure. Really straightforward, almost like a templated approach, but built using classic PowerShell. And then from a DSC resources perspective, Brian led the team building all those DSC resources. If you're interested in getting involved in helping out that team, he's more than happy to get people involved. And now it's a GitHub resource anyway, you can just go clone the thing and do your own anyway if you wish, right? But he's superb in terms of getting this thing off the ground. We had nothing before he started, okay? And people are evangelizing and evolving it all the time. So in a nutshell, okay, we didn't deploy SharePoint because it takes too long, but SharePoint on IaaS is possible. Think about it carefully. Think about how you're going to manage it. Consider all of the options and consider what it's going to cost you to actually do it. Don't just assume it's going to be cheaper than on-premises. And make sure you stay within support boundaries. The last thing you want to do is assume everything maps exactly the same as on-premises into the cloud. Most of the architectural decisions are the same. Decisions around storage, around bandwidth, and IOPS can really trip you up when it comes to supportability. I have a responsibility for SharePoint and IaaS as part of the engineering team. So if anyone's got any interesting scenarios they want to deploy into IaaS, specifically around SharePoint, I'm more than happy to talk to you about them in terms of where we can help you. And as I said already, we're looking at doing more and more validation for SharePoint and getting more and more compliancy, if you like, within the SharePoint product so that it's a kind of a best or first-class citizen for IaaS deployments. Elasticity is the one everybody wants. It's also the one I want, so you don't need to ask for that. I'm already banging the door hard to try and get that one going already. So with that, pretty much done. I know it's a lot of slide wear in there, but it's pretty hard to demo a deployment of SharePoint and IaaS within a four-hour session, never mind a one-hour session. So thanks for those of you that bear with me and hung in there. And if there's any other questions, I can hang around as long as you like. So thank you.